Violinist Jimmy Lynn will perform Joan Tower's Violin Concerto at the Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30.
In a concert career spanning the globe for 30 years, he is equally at home with an orchestra in recital, playing chamber music and teaching.
Jimmy Lynn is lauded the world over for the eloquence of his playing and the superb musicianship that marks his performances. It is a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for making such a great introduction for me.
You are going to be part of the Festival Orchestra Concert, and of course you are going to be performing this magnificent piece by Joan Tower, which we'll talk about in a few moments. But your ties to this orchestra go back a long way.
Well, mainly because of David Alan Miller, who's put this fantastic and extraordinary festival together. But his interest in promoting contemporary music and the worthy composers of our time is equally shared by myself, and we have this common interest in that we need to do more about the living composers. And so we've often done a lot of work together. And I even have worked with David all the way in Europe with the Australian Youth Orchestra, and as well as in Taiwan with the National Symphony of Taiwan. So we've traveled far and wide together.
Mm. So I just wanted to ask you a question that's always intrigued me, and that is, which is harder? Is it harder to play contemporary music or basically the old masters?
They're all different. Yes, the traditional repertoire definitely has been so well documented, you know, with performances and recordings. You grow up knowing exactly mm-hmm. what the piece is about. But then, of course, the difficulty is to find something that is uniquely yours to say in that piece that has not been done 80 times already in the last 2 years. But the thing is, the familiarity issue is really advantageous when you're looking at a piece. You go, oh yeah, I can already hum the tune, so how hard can it be? Then, of course, you tackle the piece and you realize a great work of, say, Beethoven, Brahms, or Schubert have incredible depth and layers that you need to go and discover, and incredibly challenging. But with a new work, let's say Joan Tower's Violin Concerto is relatively new, and not a whole lot of performances have been done of it, although there's a superb recording done by Elmar Oliveira. But the fact is, I have the incredible privilege of working this piece with a composer. That's something we all, as performers, love to have the opportunity to do. You know, we would love to travel back in time and visit Schubert and Brahms and Beethoven and ask them what they really meant about this and that, you know, and whether our performances meet their approval. But with someone like Joan Tower, I have the ability to do exactly that. And it's really exciting. But of course, the challenge is, do I know what in the world I'm doing with the piece? Am I really in the ballpark? So that takes a lot of experience and sometimes just sheer conjecture on my part. And also, I rely on the composer to write clearly in the music what it is that it's meant.
You spoke a moment ago of having this kinship with David, in that you have this love and respect for contemporary music. Is that a hard sell, in the sense of having other orchestras do it?
Well, it all boils down to box office.
Sure.
You know, you can't...
We like the familiar.
Right. You can't twist somebody's arms and say, you have to go and listen to this concert, right? And an audience member has to feel enticed and feel like it's a worthy experience to buy a ticket and to make the trip to the concert hall to listen to something that they don't know. But I have to remind everyone who's listening, or even my colleagues, fellow performers, that once upon a time, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony was a brand new piece. And the Eroica Symphony, for instance, was branded as being very hostile because it was so outrageously different from the conventional style of those days of Beethoven. So, you know, once in their lifetime, these great masterworks that we know so well, you know, today and take it for granted, once were very unfamiliar territories for the audience. So if we have an adventurous spirit, what we're hearing today, this weekend, might one day become classics.
Now, you know, there are theater pieces in which they don't let the playwright into the rehearsal. You know, isn't there some wisdom to that also?
Well, it's very interesting because the story in Boston is that the great Béla Bartók, the Hungarian composer, wrote the great concerto for orchestra dedicated to the Boston Symphony and Kutsevitsky. And he was so fussy during the rehearsals, passing note after note down to the podium for Kutsevitsky to correct and to change. In the second rehearsal, the Boston Symphony banned Bartók from showing up at the rehearsal so they could actually get some rehearsing done.
That's great. That's a great story.
At what point did you know that this was going to be your life, your career?
Oh, I knew this early on because I love music. And I didn't know how good I was going to be or whether I was going to be good enough to make it as a professional musician. But I certainly loved everything that I heard, including 20th century music. You know, in those days it was 20th century because it wasn't yet 21st century.
And following up on Joe's question, where were you raised?
I was born in Taiwan. And then at age 12, I moved to Sydney, Australia. And then from there on, I went to New York at age 15 to study at the Juilliard School. And I've been in New York and the U.S. more or less ever since.
Do other countries train classical musicians differently than we do? I ask that because classical music seems to have a terrific life in other countries where the audiences are being replaced, they're starting younger, and we have a little problem here in this country.
You're absolutely right. Yes, we always talk about sort of the alarming decline in classical music in attendance, in box office. Well, the fact is, classical music continues to thrive very well in this country, and there are pockets of great renaissance all over. But the fact is, classical music is a relatively newcomer in Asia. So it is actually the fad, you know, incredibly popular thing to attend a concert. In Taiwan, for instance, it was considered, at least in the 90s, that it was a very fashionable date to take your date onto a classical music concert.
But is there some relationship between the states and, for example, Taiwan, in which there's some admiration thinking, I'm always trying to sort this out, that's what they do over there, so that's what we should do over here, or am I making this up?
Yeah, I you're absolutely right. I think 20 years ago, the flow of information was definitely going from the U.S., Europe, to China, and elsewhere in Asia. And what's interesting is that the flow has started to reverse itself. There are more Chinese musicians or Asian musicians, conductors, composers, singers, really roaming the world stages now. So the reverse of information flow, and also American composers like Terry Riley and Lou Harrison became incredibly interested in Asian music and started composing music in the Asian style, whether it's Indonesian gamelan music or Chinese instruments. It's very interesting how now it's a very even back and forth, I would say.
You were 19 years old when you made your New York debut, and then played with the New York Philharmonic shortly thereafter. What is that like to do that at such a young age?
Oh, it was thrilling. You know, in those days, I was too young to know, you know, what in the world I was doing.
But you still appreciated it, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. My goodness. Yeah. When I was 20 years old, I got a phone call from my manager, and I was informed that the great violinist Heinrich Schering had become ill, and I was to play the Sibelius Concerto the very next day with the Philadelphia Orchestra and Eugene Ormandy.
Thank God for the flu, huh?
And, you know, I didn't have time to get nervous because I just packed my bags. I was on a train down to Philadelphia from New York within about 2 hours. And by 5 p.m. that evening, I was in Ormandy's apartment rehearsing with him. And the next morning, I had my first and only rehearsal with the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Sibelius Concerto. And all I could remember being on stage that day was, I can't believe it. This is the Philadelphia Orchestra. This is the orchestra that whose recordings my father brought to me when I was a child and played day and night. And this is it. I'm living in a dream. It's come true. And it was such a thrilling moment.
Do you think, so you're in the I want to bring you back to the apartment with Eugene Ormandy. So you're there and you're working with him. So is there some not concern but compassion that he has that you're filling in at the last minute, or does he expect it right out of the box?
I didn't know what he would have expected of me. You know, first of all, yes, I was a young rookie, 20 years old, and I had exactly 2 hours to get myself ready. But I didn't expect sympathy because I knew this was a real test for me. And then the parting advice my teacher had for me then was, well, I've heard that Mr. Ormandy likes to throw his weight around. And so you just oblige him when he does that. And sure enough, at the end of our run through the Sibelius, he looked at me, he said, you know, young man, I have recorded this concerto with Heifetz, with Isaac Stern, with David Oistrakh, and others. And I said, oh, yes, Mr. Ormandy, I have all these recordings. I love them all.
Oh, great.
And he looked so pleased. And then the rest of the rehearsal was just beautiful after that.
Well, and that answers my compassion question. So put that down as a no, I think.
But what if, I love this game of what if. What if you really didn't know that symphony well enough and you had the opportunity? Would you have still taken it? In other words, would you have stayed up all night and relearned it or learned the symphony?
No, I would have I definitely not. Because there's another example, the reverse. When I was 19, another manager had proposed that I would play the Tchaikovsky concerto with the Berlin Philharmonic and Riccardo Muti, the best day possible in this world.
Yeah.
And my teacher turned it down for me. She said, no, Jimmy's not ready to play the Tchaikovsky in that kind of setting yet. Give him a few more years. You know, let him play this concerto through with some other orchestras, perhaps in smaller places. Get him to know this piece well, and then he will be ready for the Berlin Philharmonic and the likes of Muti. And she was absolutely right. I was, you know, I was very disappointed that I didn't get to have this, you know, bragging rights to say I played with the Berlin Philharmonic. But in hindsight, my teacher was correct.
Now, in a minute, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get you to the microphone, and you're going to perform for us a little bit of the Joan Tower piece that you'll be playing Saturday night.
Yes, and in a few minutes after the show, I'm going to go and meet the composer down in Red Hook, and I'm going to play the concerto for her, and we're going to discuss various details. But today, I'm just going to give you a little bit of an example of this concerto.
And it's gorgeous.
It's fabulous, because first of all, is incredibly virtuosic, and we violinists always love a display vehicle, if we can be so vain.
You like to show up.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And also, the piece will appeal to any audience because it is so, it's brilliant. And it's really incredibly crafted, work.
Is this the Stradivarius?
Absolutely.
1715?
1715 it is. The ex Titian Stradivari.
How do you dare? I mean, how do you hold it? What you know, my God, if it dropped.
That's why he's cradling it in his arms like a baby. Look at that.
Well, yeah, I don't let it out of my sight when I travel. I have to be, you know, I take it into violin shops for 10,000 mile checks up.
And you've never left it in the back of a cab like certain other people.
Dear, oh dear.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then you'll come back and perform for us. And because of the mic situations, I will say our goodbyes now, but it's absolutely a thrill to have you on the program, and we can't wait for the concert Saturday night, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to talk to you both. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Violinist Jimmy Lynn will perform Joan Tower's Violin Concerto at the Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30 here at MPAC. You can go to albanysymphony.com for more information. When we return, Jimmy will perform a bit of that concerto for us. It's coming up next right here on the Roundtable. Once again, we've been talking to violinist Jimmy Lynn, who will perform Joan Tower's Violin Concerto at the Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30. Once again, you can find out more information by going to albanysymphony.com. And as promised, we now hear Jimmy Lynn perform a bit of that concerto for us.
A little bit of preamble on the Tower Concerto. The piece starts with one simple gesture, two notes, and these two notes become the DNA of the entire piece. And the piece just starts to oscillate between these two notes, back and forth, until it develops into something much more brilliant and much more in depth. And then there are two great things about the concerto, that there are two great cadenzas written for not only the solo violin, but for the concertmaster as well. The reason for that is that it was dedicated to Elmar Oliveira, the wonderful violinist, but also to his brother, Elmar's late brother, who was also a fabulous violinist, but had died all too early. So this piece is, in a way, a tribute to Elmar and his sibling violinist. So the violinist and this concert master join forces all the time. But I'm going to play for you just the opening where these two notes become the DNA of the concerto, and then I'll jump to one of the two cadenzas where the violin is left all alone to his device.
Wonderful. Amazing. Once again, that was violinist Jimmy Lynn performing a portion of Joan Tower's violin concerto at the festival, which he will perform at the Festival Orchestra Concert on Saturday night at 7:30. Jimmy Lynn, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure. Thank you so much. Coming up next, the Roundtable continues its live broadcast from Studio 2 at MPAC in Troy, New York. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.